Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Strength and Health Podcast. I'm Scott Shetler. This episode I'm calling The Basics. This episode was inspired by my client, Matt, after he had asked me about some of my favorite podcasts or podcasts that I'd recommend for him to listen to. And we've been talking a little bit about the different shows and things like that, and it made me realize that a lot of what's out there in the podcast world is mainly targeting trainers or coaches or people that have a little bit higher level understanding of the science of training and might not be the best listening material for people who are just getting into their own health and fitness program. They might not have the background in exercise science, kinesiology and such, and they might just find that stuff, you know, all the science jargon and stuff really just kind of boring, and they really want something that they can listen to and take away and put into practice right away. So I thought I'd do this episode and I'd just cover the basics. And this would be more for if I was just sitting down with somebody in the gym and we were talking about training, all the things that I would recommend that they cover in their strength training and health and fitness program. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on each one. I just want to talk about each of the areas that I'd recommend an individual focus on and the important points of those areas. Obviously, you could get down into a rabbit hole of some of these things, particularly like strength or conditioning, and you could come up with all these different programs and all this really, you know, just kind of high-level advanced stuff. But I want to focus this more on the average person who's just going to the gym to get healthy, to get fit, to feel better. And, you know, I realize that, you know, not everybody wants to compete in a strength sport like powerlifting. They're not trying to bodybuild. Most people that go to the gym, they just want to be leaner. They want to be healthier. They want to be a little bit stronger. They want to build a good physique, but they also want to have an exciting life and do cool stuff without having to spend all their time in the kitchen and the gym, you know, preparing their food and lifting weights. So there's a few areas that I'd recommend that every program focus on or contain. The first of which I would call range of motion. This is basically mobility and flexibility. The second area would be strength. The third area would be conditioning. And then the last area would be nutrition. So again, if we're just focused on the basics of each of these and how you should implement them into your daily plan and your weekly plan, let's start with range of motion. Basically, we break range of motion up into two different areas. We've got active range of motion, which is mobility, and we've got a passive range of motion, which is flexibility. Mobility, we often refer to as joint mobility. This is where we manipulate or articulate the joints to move them through the range of motion that we can attain without pain. Typically, when I put together a mobility program, I just start at the head and work my way down, and we want to make sure that we address all areas, starting with the neck. We work the shoulders, we work the elbows, the wrists, we work the spine, we work the hips, we work the knees, we work the ankles. So I've usually put together a full body joint mobility routine. There's a lot of great examples out there of these exercises, but just make sure that it focuses on, like I said, from head to toe, neck, shoulders, elbows, wrists, spine, hips, knees, and ankles. And start your joint mobility program working about maybe 20 reps per set. I've even seen recommendations where it's recommended that you work a number of reps equal to your age. And then if you have joint problems, stiffness, or arthritis, you can even implement more repetitions, even 100 or more. Joint mobility is really something that you can't overdo. And I believe the best time to do it is first thing in the morning, right when you wake up and you're a little stiff. I think it's a great way to start the day. Gets your circulation going a little bit. It unlocks the joints. It gets you moving pretty well. And I just think it's a really good thing to do. Just take 10 minutes in the morning, 10, 15 minutes and implement a full body joint mobility routine. Now, I want to keep this podcast short and I want to keep it pretty quick. So if you're looking for specific joint mobility exercises, on my YouTube channel, I've got a full body joint mobility routine that I outline that covers all the exercises that I recommend that I work with my clients and athletes. If you just go to my YouTube page and you go to the If you go to the playlist section, just look under joint mobility and you'll find a full body joint mobility series that you can follow along. All the recommendations are in there. So it's really easy to do. Like I said, either first thing in the morning or the next best time to do it would be prior to training. Use it as a warm up. Those are what I found to be the two most optimal times to do your joint mobility routine. And it's something that you really don't have to put a lot of work into to get a lot of benefits from. The second part of the range of motion would be flexibility. And flexibility, like I said, that this is more of a passive range of motion. Flexibility is basically stretching. And it's a little bit more than just touching your toes a couple of times at the end of the workout. I think a lot of people who experience really stiff muscles or they start to lose range of motion, they're just not implementing the proper flexibility routine. You know, if somebody wanted to get bigger biceps, they're not just going to do a couple sets of curls at the end of the workout. They're going to work their biceps really, really hard to get those muscles to grow to stimulate development. So flexibility needs to be addressed in a similar manner if you're trying to make improvements in muscle flexibility and improve your range of motion. I usually find the best time to do flexibility training is either after a workout or even better later in the day, particularly toward the end of the day when you're winding down, maybe getting ready to turn in for the evening. But those are usually the two best times to do your flexibility training. I know it's kind of debatable about doing it prior to a workout, but I would, if I was going to work my range of motion activities around my training session, I would usually warm up with mobility and I would conclude the workout with flexibility. Again, I think doing mobility first thing in the morning is the way to go and doing flexibility later in the evening, but I realize some people are busy and if they have to do this just around their time in the gym, start your routine out with the mobility, finish it with the flexibility. When you're doing your flexibility training, you want to focus on problem areas. So if you've got muscles that are really tight, make those the main focus of your flexibility program. I usually find most people need a lot of work in the shoulders, the hips, all aspects of the hips, the front of the hip, the hip flexors, the inner and outer part of the hips, the glutes, as well as the hamstrings and the calves. But that doesn't mean you should neglect some of the smaller muscles like your wrists and your forearms, particularly people who work on computers. Sometimes they get a lot of pain and stiffness in their hands and their wrists. So making sure to stretch out the wrists, the forearms can be really beneficial. Even stretching out muscles like the biceps, the triceps, the lats, the pecs, the quads, that should all find its way in your flexibility program if needed. I just typically find that most people have issues with shoulders, hips, hamstrings, and calves. But again, everybody's different and everybody has different, physical problems and limitations or injuries. So you want to make sure that you're addressing the issues that you need, but not at the expense of other muscle groups. One of the things that people do talk about is stretching out the lower back. And I know there's a lot of talk about the dangers of doing too much flexibility work in the lower back. You hear a lot about how the lower back you should focus on stability of the spine and that you shouldn't do a lot of stretching or flexibility for the back muscles. I'm not really an authority on that. I would say that if you do have back problems that you should seek out the advice of some sort of professional in the therapeutic side, whether you're working with some sort of manual therapist or some sort of biomechanics specialist. But just make sure you're not doing anything to exacerbate a lower back injury. So, I'm no authority on that. I've seen arguments both for and against stretching. But again, I think that there's no real bad stretch. I just think the implementation could be bad based on an individual's limitations or problems. So that's all I'm going to say about that there. So moving on from range of motion, let's go ahead and we'll talk about strength. I know I just did an episode on strength where I got pretty in depth and I wanted to trim this one up. And again, we're just focusing on the person who's just trying to become a little bit stronger, improve their physique, be more fit, just somebody who's going to the gym without the goal of competing, like I said, in a strength sport or being a bodybuilder or anything like that, but just somebody who's trying to build a strong athletic physique. I usually find for most people training who are serious about their training, 4 days a week, training each body part twice a week is usually optimal. For example, most of my clients that I would work with on this, I would split the body parts up into two upper body and two lower body workouts. And I would recommend about 30 to 45 minutes of intense training. I really feel that if you're spending much more than 45 to 60 minutes in the gym training, you know, the old saying is that you're making friends and you're not training, you should be able to get the majority of your quality work done in under an hour. Sometimes, like I said, 30 to 45 minutes. I've got some pretty high level athletes who wrap up their training in under an hour. So if you're not screwing around and wasting time in the gym, 45 minutes should be about right on for most people who are training pretty hard. Like I said, I'd usually recommend splitting the body up into upper body and lower body workouts and doing four times per week, twice per each body part. A good example of a split that I've implemented with a lot of success with some of my clients would be to do one of the upper body workouts where you're focusing on chest, upper back, the biceps and triceps. The other upper body workout would be focusing on the shoulders, the lats, and the triceps and the biceps. The reason I double up on the triceps and the biceps is the smaller muscle groups tend to recover a little bit more quickly. And then with the bigger muscle groups like the shoulders, the chest, the upper back, and the lats, those are usually the bigger, more compound movements. So we're usually doing a chest workout to be something like bench pressing, dumbbell bench pressing, you know, things where we're using the shoulder joint, the elbow joint. We're using multiple joints of movement. It's just a little bit bigger of an exercise. Same with the upper back. We're focused mostly on rowing exercises. For the shoulders, we're going to focus mostly on those overhead pressing movements. And then for the lats, we're going to focus on pull ups or pull downs. So again, the first two muscle groups are a little bit the bigger, more compound exercises, and then the biceps and triceps are the single joint, more isolation exercises. For the lower body workouts, I usually build one of the workouts around the squat and then follow that up with a little bit more direct work for the hamstrings, calves, abs, and lower back. And then the other lower body workout we usually build around the deadlift, following up with some quad dominant exercises, calves, abs, lower back. Again, doubling up on the calves, abs, and lower back because those smaller muscle groups tend to recover quickly and we can hit those a little bit more frequently. So that's how I would plan the workout, and I would split that up on a schedule where you're training either 2 days on, 1 day off, 2 days on, 2 days off, or an every other day type of thing. So you could do this where maybe on Monday you do one of your upper body workouts, Tuesday you do a lower body workout, Thursday you do the other upper body, Friday you do the other lower body, or you could go upper body on Monday, lower body Wednesday, upper body Friday, lower body Saturday or Sunday, or you could flip those days around if you want to start, you know, the week out with your squat workout, which a lot of people like to do. You could start with Monday being the lower body workout and then start alternating the upper body, lower body from there. So those are the two ways that I would plan it out, and those usually give you optimal rest between the heavier strength training sessions. And then when it comes to exercises, again, we could spend hours just talking about programming sets and reps and things like that. But just to keep it basic, what I would usually recommend would be two exercises per body part. One, a more of a bigger move that you're going to work for 3 to 4 work sets of 6 to 8 reps. So some sort of bigger movement, 3 to 4 work sets of 6 to 8 reps. That doesn't count, you know, your 1 or 2 warm-ups it might take to get to those working sets. And then one smaller movement where you're doing 2 to 3 work sets of about 10 to 12 reps. Again, so two exercises for each body part. And give you a quick example of how that would look, say for the chest. You might start out with a flat barbell bench press, and you're going to do a warm-up set or two, then you're going to hit 3 to 4 work sets with a weight that you can get for about 6 to 8 reps per set. And then you might move on to maybe an incline dumbbell press where you're going to work 2 to 3 work sets with a weight that you can hit for about 10 to 12 reps. And between that all that work, you should sufficiently exhaust the muscle to get stronger, to get bigger, provided you're doing the correct things with rest and nutrition. With those exercises, you can't just stay with the same weight for the same sets and reps forever and expect to make progress. Eventually, whatever weight you're using for those 3 to 4 sets of 6 to 8 is going to get easy, and you're going to have to add a little bit of weight, or you might even have to mess around with the rep range a little bit. As you increase weight, you might have to lower the reps a little bit. That's fine, but if you just stay around those general guidelines, you should be good to go. For the smaller muscle group, like the abs and the lower back, you might want to go 3 to 4 sets of about 10 to 15 reps. But don't be afraid to use weight on them. Again, with the repetition ranges, just use a weight that you can hit that rep range. So for instance, if you're doing a bench press and your goal is to hit 6 to 8 reps, if the weight allowed you to get 8 very easily and you felt like you could get it on 10, 12 or more, then obviously the weight's too light. If you're barely squeaking out 6 reps, then you probably went a little bit too heavy and you might need to back off a little bit. So just be smart about your load selection and never ever sacrifice technique to get more weight. Always focus on good technique quality when you're doing your exercises. Again, this is just a very general recommendation for the strength training, and you'll probably have to adjust as needed, but this is a good place for most people to start. And then over time, various, you know, weaknesses will begin emerging, and then you can start to put a little bit more emphasis on those areas. But again, this is just if we're just looking at a very generalized program to get people going. For strength, again, I recommend 4 sessions a week, about 45 minutes in the gym, 2 upper body workouts, 2 lower body workouts. For the main muscle groups, 2 exercises where you're working a bigger movement for about 3 to 4 work sets of 6 to 8 reps, and then 1 smaller movement for about 2 to 3 work sets of 10 to 12 reps. And then again, for those smaller muscle groups like the abs, the lower back, you might want to go 3 to 4 sets of about 10 to 15 reps. Especially with the lower back, I find tends to respond a little bit better to higher repetitions. And always focus on increasing the load that you're lifting over time so that you're continually making progress. So again, these are just general recommendations. You'll probably to adjust and tweak as needed. But for the scope of this podcast, that's what I'd recommend. Moving on from the strength, we're going to look at conditioning. So conditioning, you know, basically is another word for cardio, I guess, for lack of a better term. And what I would recommend would be 4 to 5 days a week. I usually see a lot of really good results with my clients 4 to 5 days a week. And what I would recommend that most people do is 2 to 3 lower intensity cardiovascular training sessions a week. And basically, we're going to shoot for about 30 to 45 minutes of continuous activity, keeping the heart rate around 130 beats per minute at the lower end, 150 beats per minute at the higher end. This is just a generic recommendation, but that heart rate range is usually right on for most people when they're trying to develop aerobic capacity, which is what we're trying to get with the low intensity cardio training sessions. So what we're trying to do is just make your cardiovascular system more efficient. This kind of training can be boring for some people. You know, it's about putting on that heart rate monitor and making sure that you're staying in that range for the 34 to 45 minute time frame. But I've seen huge improvements with people. And when I talk about the improvements, usually what we see is massive reductions in their resting heart rate. We see huge improvements in the recovery heart rate. And what I've noticed with a lot of my athletes, particularly with a lot of my combat athletes who implement this, they usually find that they, as they'll usually say it, they have cardio on the mats for days, meaning they're just not gassing out. So this kind of gives them a bigger gas tank. But again, this type of training is all about making your cardiovascular system more efficient. So 2 to 3 lower intensity sessions a week where you're shooting for about 30 to 45 minutes per session, keeping your heart rate from 130 to 150 beats per minute. So the best thing to do is get yourself a good heart rate monitor and then just track it as you're doing any activity. It could be walking, it could be walking with a weight vest, it could be jogging, it could be using a cardiovascular machine like a rower or an elliptical or a treadmill. Just make sure you get your heart rate in that range for the desired time frame and you'll be good to go. In addition to the 2 to 3 lower intensity sessions, I recommend 1 to 2 higher intensity sessions where you're going for about 20 to 30 minutes, and that includes the warm-up and the cool-down. These are things that are going to be more like your intervals. It's people that might like to go out and run the stadium steps. You could do periods of sprinting followed by periods of walking or jogging. So basically, you're going to be alternating periods of higher intensity with periods of lower intensity for recovery. 20 to 30 minutes of total activity, that includes about a 5-minute warm-up and about a 5 to 10-minute cool-down at the end of the session is usually ideal. In a nutshell, you could just do something as simple as doing an all-out effort for about 20 or 30 seconds and then follow that up with about twice as long for the recovery. So if you're sprinting for, say, 20 seconds to 30 seconds, you follow that up with a recovery period of about 40 to 60 seconds. So you might sprint or run hard and then walk, or you might sprint or run hard, then jog. But basically, you're just alternating periods of higher and lower intensity. So that's it for the conditioning. 4 to 5 total days, 2 to 3 lower intensity sessions, 1 to 2 higher intensity sessions. And the one thing that I would recommend supplementing that with is lots of daily walking. And I would consider this to be more activity than exercise. So I would separate this and I wouldn't even count this as a lower intensity workout. I think we do a lot of sitting and we're designed to move around. So if you've got a desk job or you're not out moving around a lot, you're not participating in activities that, you know, like hiking or mountain biking, things where you're out being active, I definitely recommend trying to include more walking during the day. And this is going out and walking with a purpose. It's not out going and taking a stroll. One of the things that's kind of in vogue right now for a lot of people is to do these 10-minute walks, where it's recommended that after your 3 main meals that you go out and you just take a 10-minute brisk walk. That supposedly helps with digestion. It helps with nutrient partitioning and other things. So I have seen a little bit of the science behind it, but again, I'm not a specialist in that area. But I would definitely recommend trying to supplement these cardiovascular training sessions with daily walking. You think about it like this: if you do 3 10-minute walks, one after each of your main meals, that's 30 minutes of extra activity you're doing a day that you weren't doing before. I can say that I've used these 10-minute walks or even 15-minute walks after meals, and I definitely feel a lot better than if I just eaten and I go sit down. So it's definitely something worth looking into, but just try to get some daily activity in where you're going out doing some brisk walking for about 30 minutes or more on a daily basis. So again, we're going to call that activity. That's not our conditioning training. It's something that we do in addition to. Now, finally, we want to talk about nutrition, because this is the other basic area that I think needs to be covered for a lot of people. Now, I don't want to get into the different types of diets out there. I know nutrition is one of the most argumented things, right up there with politics and religion. But this is my take on it, and this is what I've seen work for a lot of people, and I've been doing this for about 20 years now. Now, I want to preface this by saying I'm not a dietitian, I'm not a nutritionist. These recommendations are just based on my experience. Obviously, if you have a health condition, consult your doctor before you make any nutritional changes. Consult a professional, a registered dietitian, somebody that can help you put together a more sound nutrition plan. But I'm just talking for the average healthy person. I've found these recommendations to be right on for most people. So for nutrition, mostly focus on whole unprocessed foods. And I'm going to even go further and say mostly plant foods. Obviously, if you know me, you know that I eat a plant-based diet. I'm a vegan, and I've had just amazing experience adopting a plant-based diet as far as body mass, as far as energy, as far as recovery. I've had very, very good experience. But I think even for somebody who's not following a totally plant-based diet, to getting more plant foods on their plate is a good idea. Next, I would say don't overeat. This is hard to do. We like food. A lot of our social activities revolve around food. And I honestly think that if you were to tell somebody to eat just what they think they're burning on a daily basis, that they'd probably eat more calories than they actually need. I think there was even a test or a study done where people were put through a workout and then they were taken to a buffet and they were instructed to select the amount of food that they think they needed based on what they burned during the workout, and everybody overshot it to a massive degree. So overeating does tend to be an issue, but if we're focused mostly on whole plant foods, it's really tough to overeat because they're very nutritionally dense, but they're calorically sparse. So focus mostly on whole and processed foods. Again, mostly plants in my opinion, and don't overeat. Next, it might be beneficial to consider some options like time-restricted eating or time-restricted eating or intermittent fasting. I know is a big thing for a lot of people. Again, I'm not going to get too into that. I don't know much about the science behind it. I do know that for time-restricted eating, Dr. Rhonda Patrick, who is brilliant in my opinion, has presented a lot of information, and I know stemming from a lot of the research being done on the benefits of time-restricted eating. But for the most part, I don't think it's a bad idea to try to condense your calories down into an 8 to 10 hour window, or at least try and consume your calories in under 12 hours. I think when you look at how long our day is, for most people, we're tending to stay up a lot later. We probably don't sleep as much as we should. And a lot of that time we're awake, we're sneaking in calories. So just from the simple standpoint of helping us consume fewer calories, time-restricted eating is probably a great idea. And I'm not even talking about like going full on intermittent fasting. I'm just talking about condensing that window that we're eating our normal calories in to less than 12 hours, 8 to 10 hours probably would even be better. So I don't think it's a bad idea to consider options like that and see if it's a fit for you. Drink mostly water. Definitely stay away from calorie-containing beverages because that's one way that we sneak a lot of calories into our diet. Sodas and other drinks like that are just crap. Drink mostly water. I don't think there's anything wrong with drinking unsweetened tea or a little bit of coffee. But again, coffee tends to be a vehicle for greater caloric consumption. A lot of times people are loading their coffee up with sugar, with milk and caramel and just other things to turn their coffee into a sugar delivery system. So try to get those calories out of the coffee, but I don't think there's anything wrong with drinking a little bit of coffee. Again, maybe if you're hypertensive, you probably want to avoid it, follow your doctor's orders, but drink mostly water. And then the other thing would be eating healthy. If you know, focus, the person who's kind of my nutrition guru is Dr. Michael Greger. He's the author of the book, How Not to Die. And he likes to say, it's what you do the majority of the time. You know, focus what you're doing most of the time and don't sweat the rest of it. So I think if you're eating healthy, you know, 90 to 95% of the time, don't sweat that other 5 to 10%. Go out and enjoy whatever it is you want to enjoy. If you know you're going to be at a social event and you want to have a little bit of this or a little bit of that, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think when we try to eat healthy, we can stress ourselves out, you know, trying to eat perfect all the time. And if you go out and you have that drink or two, or you have a little bit of extra dessert or something like that, I think people tend to beat themselves up, and that's not healthy. So don't sweat it if you eat some junk food every now and then, or if you like to go out and have a drink every now and then. Just don't do it the majority of the time. And you know, the other thing is too, is some people will even go so far as to try to plan like maybe a cheat day or a cheat meal. And when they break that, if they eat their cheat meal when it wasn't planned, or they go a little bit overboard on a cheat day, what people tend to do is just destroy the rest of the day or the rest of the weekend or whatever and say, well, I'll just start back on Monday. And that's the worst thing to do. That'd be like, you know, the analogy would be like if you're driving down the road and you get a flat tire, instead of just fixing the flat and moving on, you get out and pop the other three tires. You know, it's ridiculous. So don't let food become a massive source of stress in your life. Just try to eat healthy most of the time and don't sweat it. You know, like I said, maybe 5, 10% of the time if you're getting away from healthy foods. Again, this is for the average person. If this is not a recommendation I'd put out there for somebody who's dealing with a chronic disease or something like that, that is where you're going to focus on working with your healthcare professional. I'm talking about the average healthy person here. Now, if we want to get into the specifics of nutrition and get a little bit tighter with these recommendations, usually what I tell people, again, I reiterate, focus mostly on whole, unprocessed foods. But when we get into the specifics of things like proteins, fats, carbs, and stuff like that, here's the recommendations that I use with most of the people that I've worked with. Protein tends to be the biggest, so let's start with that. And I'm just going to paraphrase loosely Dr. Garth Davis from his excellent book, Proteinaholic. When we talk about protein requirements, and again, some people will probably want to debate these. People, particularly with bodybuilders, are going to argue that this isn't enough, but I found this to work out pretty well for myself as well as most of the people that I've worked with. So I'm just going to share these recommendations. The RDA for protein intake is 0.8 grams per kilogram of body weight. Dr. Davis, in his book, basically recommends that that is probably right on for the average person. He goes on to say that the weekend warrior, so the regular person who maybe takes their training a little bit more seriously, they train a little bit harder, maybe they go out and they do, you know, some intense activity on the weekend, like maybe they participate in triathlons or maybe they do a little recreational like powerlifting or something like that, right? The weekend warrior is probably going to be fine bumping that protein up to about 1 gram per kilogram of body weight and then adding in a recovery drink around a workout of an additional 20 to 30 grams of protein. So again, for the weekend warrior, 1 gram per kilo of body weight with another 20 to 30 grams in maybe a recovery drink or some sort of post-workout meal. So that's a little bit more than the 0.8 grams per kilogram body weight recommended as the RDA. So moving up from that, he says serious athletes. So these are athletes like high level endurance, high level strength athletes. You know, these people will probably need to bump that protein up a little bit higher to about 1.2 to 1.7 grams per kilogram of body weight. This is where you're going to get a lot of pushback because I definitely know bodybuilders who recommend 2 grams or higher per kilo of body weight or even per pound of body weight, which is a lot of protein. But I can tell you, I've seen people build muscle at a pretty rapid pace following these recommendations. Moving on from protein, for most people, consuming about 20 to 30% of their daily calories from fat is usually a good idea. But don't be afraid to experiment a little bit. I know some people who do really well on lower fat intake, and I know some people who do really well on a little bit higher fat intake. I know some people who bump their fat up to about 30 to 40% of their daily calories and do really well, particularly some strength athletes. But I usually start people right around 20 to 30% of their daily calories, and then you can adjust from there. And then the rest of the calories are going to come from carbohydrates. I know this is the bad word, the evil word. This is why I saved it for last. We know carbs make you fat, right? Well, that's a bunch of BS. And Dr. Davis addresses that in his book, Proteinaholic, which I found to be very, very interesting. Again, I'm not an authority on nutrition, so I'm not going to get into the science behind things that he talked about in the book, like de novo lipogenesis and stuff like that. But I will say carbs are not going to make you fat. Now, eating a bunch of processed crap, yeah, that may make you fat. But unfortunately, donuts and pizza and foods like that get labeled carbs when generally about the same percentage of their calories are coming from fat. So, you know, whether it's a fat, whether it's a carb, it's all junk food. So it should be avoided regardless. But when we talk about carbs, we're talking about things like whole fruits. We're talking about whole grains. We're talking about things like sweet potatoes, vegetables. And I've even got a problem calling vegetables carbs because let's just take, for example, kale. I looked up kale online for nutrition breakdown on one cup of kale, and I found some variants. But generally speaking, what I found, one cup of kale has about 33 calories, 6 grams of carbs, 2.5 grams of fiber, 0.6 grams of fat, and almost 3 grams of protein. I usually see it listed at about 2.9 grams of protein. Plus, it's got a bunch of vitamins, things like vitamin A, vitamin C. It's got iron, it's got magnesium, it's got vitamin B6. So is it really a carb? You know, I mean, we're talking about a vegetable that's got carbs, that's got fiber, that's got protein, that's got fat, and that's got a bunch of micronutrients. So I really have a hard time lumping that into one category such as carbs. And that's personally my take on nutrition. You know, I just try to eat mostly whole foods and I don't really worry about the breakdown. I just try to make sure I'm getting enough to fuel my my daily activity. But nowadays we like to assign macros to things, which I think personally is pretty ridiculous, but you know, most whole food contains one or more of the quote unquote macronutrients. So just keep that in mind before you start labeling macronutrients as good or bad. But carbs are not the enemy. Anything eaten in excess is bad. It's got nothing to do with whether it's protein, fat, or carbs. The recommendation for fiber, I think the RDA is somewhere around 20 grams a day or 25 grams a day, something like that. I think for a 2000 calorie diet I read, but I've found that if people focus on getting 50 plus grams a day, good things start happening. And that's pretty easy to do if you're eating a lot of whole plant-based foods. Have you even heard people say that fiber was bad for you? I can't believe that I've read something that moronic on the internet, but as far as I'm concerned, fiber's good, and try to get a lot of it in your diet. And last, water. I've seen recommendations to consume around 0.6 times body weight in ounces. That is, again, all this counting in numbers I find to be a little bit ridiculous. But I have seen that to be a recommendation. You know, they'll say maybe shoot for 3 liters of water a day, drink a little bit more around activity, you know, make sure you're not dehydrated, or check the color of your pee. It should be light yellow or mostly clear or whatever. You know, don't wait till you're thirsty to drink your water, you know, whatever. There's all kinds of recommendations there. But those are my recommendations when I'm working with a client or helping somebody trying to dial in their nutrition plan. But if you're like me and you don't want to get too specific, just break it down to the bare bones basics here and just eat mostly whole foods. Make sure that most of it comes from plants. Eat enough to fuel your activity. If you're eating whole foods and you're eating enough to fuel your activity, you're not going to be protein deficient. You're probably not going to be deficient on a whole lot of stuff. So don't sweat it. Don't worry about your macros. Make sure you're drinking plenty of water. Don't wait till you're thirsty to drink. If your pee's a little bit on the darker side, you may want to bump up that water intake. I mean, this stuff is not rocket science, people. And that way, if you're not spending all your time in the kitchen counting calories and sweating your macros, you can actually go out and do really awesome stuff and have an interesting life. So those are just my recommendations on nutrition. So to wrap this up, the basics, this is what I would tell somebody if we were sitting down in my gym or sitting down in the office in my training center and putting together a plan for somebody who just wants to be healthy, who wants to be, I guess, fit is a good way to describe it. But this is somebody who wants to build strength, wants to have a good athletic looking physique, wants to be able to go out and participate in any activities they want. If you got young kids, you're going to have the energy to keep up with your kids. You know, you're going to have range of motion because you're focused on your joint mobility, your flexibility. So you're going to have healthy joints. You're not going to suffer from tight muscles all the time and be in chronic pain. You're going to have some strength and some good muscle development because you're lifting weights. You're implementing a good, well-balanced strength training program that's going to hit every muscle in your body, promoting balance, strength, and muscle growth. You're going to have a good level of aerobic capacity because you're working cardio, both higher and lower intensities. And then you're going to be healthy because you're focused on eating a healthy diet that's going to help promote good body composition and good health and longevity. So it's really that simple. Like I said, you can get down massive, 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 deep, never-ending rabbit holes if you look at each of these in isolation. But if we just want to talk about the basics and just some good general recommendations for the average person to get started on, this is where I would go with it. So hopefully you enjoyed this episode. If you've got any suggestions on future topics, please be sure to email me at scott@eptsgym.com. I always try to put my contact information in the show notes, or you can find it at the podcast page, but you can also get a hold of me through my website at www.eptsgym.com or my personal website at scottshetler.com. All my contact info is there, links to my social media, ways to get a hold of me if you've got any questions about any of these podcasts or if you've got any recommendations for future episode topics. So again, hopefully you liked this episode on the basics. Maybe inspires you to take a look at what you're doing for your fitness training program now, and maybe change up some areas that you might be lacking a little bit in, or that you might be overly focused on, that might help you bring some balance to your program. And remember, this isn't just about strength. This isn't just about, you know, cardio/aerobic capacity. This isn't just about nutrition. It's about everything. It's about bringing balance to your health and fitness program. Again, this is for the person out there that doesn't want to be a pro athlete. This is for the person that just wants to have a pretty awesome life and have good quality of life, and to allow them to do all the things that they want to do and participate in all the things they want to participate in. So again, hopefully you enjoyed this episode. contact me at scott@eptsgym.com with any suggestions, comments, feedback, or suggestions for future show topics. And until next time, stay strong and stay healthy.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.